Hello, welcome to Most Clicked, a podcast about digital marketing in the higher education sector. I'm your host, Nathan Monk, co-founder at Smile. I'm joined by my other co-founder, Matt Lees, and bringing you additional insight, its long-term collaborator, Kyle Campbell. Now, this week, we are talking about an article written by Lewis Wake, who is at University of St. Andrews, on their internal communications blog about Jacob's Law. Jacob's Law is a UX principle, and it's been applied in this case to what they're going to do with their website. Does one of you two want to give a less mysterious intro about what they're doing? Matt, do you know about this one?
I don't know too much about what they're doing, but I've read the article. I thought there's some interesting points in there, and for me, it strikes me that it's a bit of a scale. And so the article says that users want your website to look the same as everybody else's website, so that when they land on it, they know where to go, they know what to do, and therefore they're trying to kind of keep everything looking the same as every other university website. And to a certain extent, I do agree with this, but I think it's a bit of a scale, and it's about picking and choosing where you should try and be different. And perhaps there's one particular line. Let me just grab it here. It says complexity for the sake of it is a violation of Jacob's Law, and I absolutely agree with that. And I think we've seen examples in our time where sideways scrolling websites and people just trying to do something different, and ultimately it's not worked. So yeah, I think it's about picking and choosing where you choose to be different.
It's a dangerous line, though, right? Between, because basically you could read this as, we're working to make our website look like every other university website in the UK, in the world, because that's what users want. But for me, that question then becomes, okay, well, where is the point of differentiation? Mm-hmm. How do you become unique? How do you be creative and innovative in the space if you're actually just doing what everyone else is doing?
Yeah. Content. Yeah,
I mean, if you just follow that principle through to the hill, and you make that the hill you die on, you end up looking like gov.uk, don't you? .gov even, yeah.
You know what though, Kyle? I've been in no end of meetings where people cite that as kind of like, oh, we want to do a gov.uk. I mean, ever since kind of design systems became more mainstream, or they got adopted by universities, it's gov.uk seems to be held as the gold standard, and I think that it starts to create quite a bit of monotony. And I wrote a piece so many years ago now about the homogenization of university websites, and things had gotten better in large, I think, and now I worry that they might be going backwards to just a different sort of homogenous nature of the beast.
I mean, I think, like, I agree with you. I think .gov is held up as an example, and I can see why. And I think in certain contexts, it really works. Like when I worked at Nottingham Trent, we used it for that same sort of model for the intranet. Now, for that sort of staff portal information, you know, I think it makes sense. And you know, I agree with Matt, and I think it's important to pull out that idea of the scale. And it's when you think about UX decisions, you're thinking about marketing and communications in a web estate, usually decisions are made on that scale, aren't they? So on one side you've got like pure marketing copywriting speak, and then on the other you've got like, you know, no frills basic kind of language so user can clearly understand it. Now, you know, if you're in a web team, you're obviously going to optimize more towards like the clear language, and that's the school of content design. But ultimately, if you just strip out anything unique and different about your marketing offer, you don't have a brand, you don't have a position or a remarkable point of view, do you? So maybe it's more kind of a dance there around what the content is, you know, and how it's expressed, rather than the actual kind of website rules and structures. But yeah, for me in my own practice, and I've been both from the content marketing and the content design side, understanding where that scale is, and your you know, your power to make a decision on where that needle lands, depending on the audience, is quite an important one to get your head around.
Hmm.
It's an interesting point around like things like information architecture, because actually I think that standard data models have knocked around in nerdier circles for many a years now. And there's, you know, we've had chats about this. All universities have courses. Why shouldn't there be a universal course format for all universities? I think that that would actually be really helpful for a number of reasons. And I think that actually, generally, you can't do too much with a university menu system either. I think the moment you try to do something unusual with a courses tab, people just go, "Ooh, no, that doesn't feel right." And I saw one of our clients do it the other day. They changed a menu system, and I was just a bit like, no, that doesn't work. No, let's change that back. But it's the more creative side of me that worries that we'll live in a landscape of boring carousels and full page sections that kind of all look the same, except the fonts and the colors are different. That you talked about brand expressions, Kyle, feel like we're really losing that in favor of system.
Yeah, it depends. If you look outside of higher ed, I mean, there's, especially with like smaller businesses you know, you can look at a site like, not example of small business, medium-sized enterprise, something like Ahrefs or, you know, SEO tools. But their website is very clear and very coherent, but it has a very kind of unique style about it. But it doesn't, you know, take away from the content or message it's trying to communicate. And it's all done in an HTML. Of course, it's done in HTML. I'm talking about making it accessible. You know, it's not like kind of images on with text on top of them and stuff. It's designed to be accessible, but the kind of creative aspect to it really adds to the, you know, what the brand is and what the message is. And, you know, I'd love to see more of that in higher ed, especially when you have an institution that is, you know, has a very clear idea of what it wants to be known for, you know, what it wants to evoke, etc. There are examples of really well-built websites out there that, just because they're more creative, for want of a better phrase, it doesn't detract from their accessibility and their functionality.
I think, sorry, Matt,
I was going to say, it strikes me that there seems to be two key words coming out, complexity and creativity, and they're kind of butting heads against one another. Yes. And it's important to keep those elements of brand and creativity, but not perhaps in some of the key user journeys through that site. So understanding where are people likely to go, where are users looking to get to, what are their objectives, and then not making those journeys overly complex just for the sake of being different.
That balance is such an important point, because there's I know it's not kind of the point of this episode, but there was another blog post on another internal blog by Edinburgh, I think, and they had talked about how they are retiring some of their longer form story content. So the BBC longer form story thing really took off about 5 years ago, and everybody wanted it. You know, you got these parallax sections and all this, that, and the other. And Edinburgh was saying that they're retiring those because they're too difficult to maintain. But what I was going to say as a takeaway from this episode is to actually consider focusing on landing pages or specific hero stories and creating those brand expressions around those and spending time and making those look really creative and innovative. It's not necessarily about having a totally unique and innovative website, aka sideways scrolling, that just is horrendous for UX, but actually having, you know, pages that are like, wow, okay, this is an experience online. But it's just so sad to see a university going, yeah, that's just too much, we can't actually maintain that. And it's just a worry about what's going on in university websites and what all of these sorts of conversations mean for the trajectory of innovation in the sector.
Yeah, I think you've got a good point there, because just because that form is maybe, you know, in this case being scrapped, it doesn't mean it's not still popular. I mean, like, yeah. New York Times does this, don't they? And they do brilliant immersive articles on long form topics, and they're known for it, and it works very well. And you know, I've always felt that on the content side, you kind of do need to have like a partner developer who's focused on that sort of aspect of your website, that sort of front facing aspect. But usually that sort of resource in a marketing team in higher ed is viewed as a luxury, when really, if you are looking at content marketing, which I think probably 95% of universities are at this point, it seems like something you kind of need, you know, to be distinctive and stand out in that space.
Matt, any final takeaways on this one?
I actually think we've wrapped it up pretty well in those two prior points. I think, yeah, lot of interesting points to talk through today.
All right, nice one. Well, thank you to both of you once again for an interesting chat. Thank you as well to all of our wonderfully loyal subscribers. If you've enjoyed today's chat, do drop us a like. And if your name is Lewis Wake, then maybe drop in a comment to tell us what you thought about today's episode. Of course, it's not actually limited to Lewis. Anybody can. Anyway, for now, bye.